You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Carrie Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Todd is the director of leadership here at Lifeway. And we have the pleasure of being joined by another director at Lifeway today, Mr. Michael Kelly.
So much direction.
So much. That's right.
More than one direction.
So many. Too many cooks in the kitchen. They're both going to start telling me what to do any moment now. Michael is a man of many titles, but the one we're going to go with is the director of discipleship at Lifeway. And we'll let him try to explain what that means because I can't figure it out. It means that he's in charge of lots of things.
Yeah.
I guess that is kind of true. There, unfortunately, like the Holy Spirit is the director of discipleship. And then there's also this other guy who has the title. So it's a little weird.
So is it blasphemous? Is that what we're going with?
Man, I hope not. But it does, like, it weighs
That's
a little
one
bit.
Unforgivable sin is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit.
It does weigh a little bit heavy. So, but from a
business standpoint,
from that standpoint, it means, like, as a publishing leader, we obviously here do a lot of Bible studies of different types. And so a good number of those Bible studies in their different versions fit in our shop for adults that we create here.
So we've had Faith Watley on the podcast before. Faith is, I believe, the director of adult ministries.
Yep.
So she and Michael essentially split the curriculum and publishing and whatever for adult Bible studies.
That's
and
small group, short and those, term, yeah.
All of those things ongoing. fall between us. So we're counterparts in a lot of ways.
Right. Michael has also written a fair amount. He's written Bible studies. He's written a couple books. Your most recent is Boring, correct?
That's right.
And to listeners, that's not an insult. That's the name of the book.
It's a good book. I actually read that one.
That's right.
I remember.
It's Boring, Finding an Extraordinary God in an Ordinary Life. So the book is boring, but it is not boring. So,
it's really autobiographical.
My life.
If you look at the hashtag boring book, that's where you can find it.
You can.
And you can find quotes and whatnot.
You can.
And then michaelkelly.co is his blog. And that you can find, you blog a couple times a week?
Yeah. I do like a thing on Wednesdays that's just sort of a roundup, like a mashup of different stories. But then there's four other posts. So there's daily content on there.
Gotcha. All good stuff. And Michael, also, he contributes regularly to the Lifeway Leadership blog, so lifeway.com/leadership. You can see his stuff there. Always helpful. So that's the bullet point stuff. But and then Michael just gave a little bit of the gist of what he does here at Lifeway. But tell us a little bit about how you got to Lifeway, a little bit about your family, those things that make Michael interesting, not boring.
Not boring. So married. We've been married for almost 17 years. It's been a long time. Is that right? Yeah, that's right.
Old enough to start forgetting. That's
totally.
Good.
There you go. For sure. So 17 years, we have 3 children. We have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And
not a lot of gray hair to go with those kids. I'm impressed.
Not yet. I've shaved my beard that I had grown for this over vacation, mainly because I feel like it aged me like 20 years. So shave the beard. I can grow a beard. Another interesting fact about me.
Not here. Yeah, not so much.
How did I get to Lifeway? Okay, so this is going to be a serious moment here for a second because it's wound up with our kids. So when our son, who is now 11, so he is fine now, but when he was 2, he was diagnosed with cancer. And when he was diagnosed with cancer, I was just sort of a freelance guy. So I was a freelance author and speaker and that kind of thing. And then our son had cancer and needed, honestly, we needed insurance benefits. And so one of the first guys that came to the hospital was a guy that worked at Lifeway that I had worked with when I had done some writing. And he shoved $100 in my pocket and asked me if I needed a job. And I said yes. And so that was 10 years ago. And I came here as
you did all right, man.
it's been neat. It's been cool. So I came here as an editor, and then have served in a few different capacities over the years. So it's been a cool place for us, not only just because of the team that we get to work with, but I mean, really personally, just because this organization is something that the Lord has used to provide for our family when we really needed provision. So that's how I got here.
And you wrote about that a little bit. And what is it? Wednesdays were normal.
Wednesdays were pretty normal. Wednesdays the first normal book I wrote. Yeah. And it really truly is kind of memoir-esque. It's an effort to translate pain and suffering through the lens of faith as told through the account of our son's illness. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do want to go ahead and move into our first question. And it's important for me to put a caveat in place. You can't say people in the room as the answer.
Okay.
I see your notes. I realize that Todd and I are top two on the list, but so just skip below that.
It's going to be rough.
Who are you learning from right now?
Also, Eric Geiger does not listen, so you can't mention his name. Oh. It doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
No brownie points.
So who am I learning from? So I can frame this in a couple of different ways. One of the people that I'm constantly learning from is my pastor. So I serve as part of the elder team at Grace Community Church, and our pastor, Scott, is the founding pastor at the church. Church was founded 25 years ago. And so I'm always learning from him, not only from a teaching and preaching perspective, but just from a general leadership kind of perspective. And the way that he does kind of leadership lessons is not so much... It's very organic. It's not that he says, okay, guys, I'm going to teach you something about leadership right now. It's just more through the talking and the process and being together and serving together and that kind of thing. So, I'm learning a lot from him. And then, you know, weirdly, the older I get, you guys probably, cause you guys have kids that are young too. I've learned a lot from my kids. Not to be sort of cheesy about that, but like I'd learn a lot from my kids about discipleship, about what it means to be a kid. And so I'd learn a ton by watching them. And then there's other strong leaders, particularly in our church on our elder team that lead in different ways in different kind of arenas of life. So most everyone is in the secular kind of business world, but some of them are independently employed. So it's different. You get to see them lead in different environments and glean stuff.
I don't know that we've heard anybody say that they're learning from their kids, but I do think that makes a lot of sense, because when you voice that in that way, I'm like, oh yeah, because in order to explain something simply, you have to really know it. You have to really know something in order to explain it simply.
Yeah, for sure.
To a child. And so I'm challenged by that all the time.
Children are such reflections of our leadership as well.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
Good and bad.
You're
heavy on the bad.
You're moving toward meddling.
Oh?
I'm just saying.
Metal workers.
If children are a reflection of us, then half the time we get upset with them. Is it really because they're being disobedient, or are they just
when I argue with my older daughter, I'm arguing with me.
Totally. Yes.
And I am mad at her for being me. Uh-huh. I'm not mad at her for being her. Uh-huh. I'm mad at her for being as annoying as I am.
Yeah.
And that's problematic.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic when you think about it, because one of the things that I think we fight against, or we should fight against as parents, is trying to shape our kids into our own image rather than embracing the fact that they've been individually created in God's image. The great irony there, though, is that whether we like it or not, and many times we don't, they already are sort of in our image. Mm-hmm. So they are reflections of us.
They're a reflection of your actual self, yeah, not your aspirational self. Not your
perceived self. Right. In your mind. Yeah.
Not how you pretend to be at the office. Yeah.
So I do. I mean, I learn a lot. I learn a lot from them. I learn a lot from them about what it means to relate to God innocently and purely. And I learn a lot from them about about myself, and also just a ton about my own sin, like mm-hmm. you guys are talking about. Like, I really do learn what that is by looking at them.
I have one more follow-up question, and this may lead into our second official question. But so you came into Lifeway as an editor. You've moved to running some different teams, and now you're over a team that does a lot of different stuff. So where do you look to for, like, organizational leadership? Like, where are you gleaning wisdom there? And because it's sort of an organic growth kind of thing where you just sort of took on more responsibility and led one team, and then the team grew, and then you kind of folded in another team and these kinds of things. But you were an editor, and editors and organizational leaders are not always carrying the same strengths finder list, if you will.
That's right. That's right. You know, I think for me, one of the big assets that we have, because we do have a pretty large team, is that we have a strong leadership team. Mm-hmm. So, man, I have learned a ton from the guys that directly report to me, who in turn lead other people. So, for example, Ken, who is the man who is the direct leader, the manager of the team that does our ongoing Bible studies. You know, early on in my tenure at this job, he very kindly, you know, pulled me aside and just said, "Hey, it would be really good if you started practicing walking around leadership." And I didn't know what that was. And he was like, "Well, basically it means you walk around." Oh, so you mean I don't just sit here like I'm an editor and hang out and do my stuff, but get up and, like, walk around and check on
other
people.
People's offices.
Totally. And just to check and see how things are going. So I learned that from him. And then there's another guy here who is on our leadership team named David Francis. And David is ex-military and has been at Lifeway for a long time and has led in a variety of different ways. And so I've learned a ton from him. So we have a monthly standing meeting, David and I do, where I set the agenda, and basically all it is for an hour is just me asking him questions. And sometimes they're questions about the history of Lifeway. Help me understand this dynamic. How does this work in the organization? What's the history about this or that? Just all stuff that's important to know that he's got crammed in his mind. And then some of it is me asking his perspective on, I'm thinking about this move or that move. Have you seen this work before or not work before? And he's super helpful, wonderfully kind, and a great, great teacher.
Well, that may transition us into the second question. And that is, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either the team that you're leading or for you as a leader?
Yeah. Okay. So I think what it is leadership like me. So I remember one time in seminary, we had this awesome experience. You know, in seminary is a time when you become excruciatingly aware of everything that you don't know. You know, like, up until that point, you're roughly in the dark about how ignorant you are about everything. And then day by day, you realize just how dumb you really are. And so this happened one day. I was in a preaching class, and there were only five or six of us in this class. It was a small school, and we walked in, and our preaching professor was named Dr. Robert Smith Jr., greatest preacher I've ever heard. But Dr. Smith now is, you know, 70 or so, African American guy, big booming voice, wonderful preacher. And so we walked in one day, and next to Dr. Smith was, like, the polar opposite of Dr. Smith. It was this small, kind of hunched over, white haired gentleman, you know, spectacles, this guy sitting there. And so we're you know, who's this joker that's going to, you know, why is he in this class? And so we sit down and Dr. Smith says, gentlemen, would like to introduce you to my good friend, Warren Wiersbe. What? I mean, it was I didn't know. Of course, none of us recognized him, but it was like, hey, Warren has agreed to sit here with our class. And so rather than doing a lecture today, ask him whatever you want to ask him. So here's six guys who get 2 hours with Warren Wiersbe to ask him about anything. And one of my buddies raised his hand and asked the question, Dr. Wiersbe, you know, we're all 20, 25-year-old young preacher kind of guys. What advice would you give us? And he said, more than anything else, as a young preacher, you need to find your voice. So don't try to preach like Dr. Smith. Don't try to preach like me. Don't try to preach like Andy Stanley or Louis Giglio or whoever. Don't try to preach like those guys. Figure out who you are. And that has stuck with me, not just from a preaching perspective, but from a leadership perspective, right? So lead like you. Now, I mean, you guys know there's some really phenomenal leaders in our organization. You guys are great leaders. Todd, you're a great leader. Eric is a great leader. Dr. Rainer's a great leader. I think one of the challenges when you're surrounded by great leaders is to not just be a leader imitator, but to actually lead like you, to figure out how the principles that you're seeing from other people actually translate through your personality. So for me personally, it's that battle of continuing to try to figure out what does it look like for me to lead while understanding some of these principles that are important.
That's a really interesting distinction, that the difference between learning leadership principles and learning leadership or imitating leadership practices.
Yeah.
Because it's, I think imitating is a way that we often sort of fool ourselves into thinking we're learning.
Totally. I think it is too. You can say that from not just leadership in general, but in particular, even down to the level of leadership in the church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think over the last 20, 30 years in particular, we've seen a lot of church leaders become enamored with a specific type of church dynamic, a methodology, and then come back. They go to a conference and learn about this thing or that thing or whatever and come back and just try to wholesale implement that deal into their context. And it just doesn't work because at some point, you've got to have the ability to separate principle from practice and be able to take the principle and you know, clothe that in the place where you are, like the context that you are. Same thing is true of one's personal leadership, I think, in being able to look at other people who are super strong leaders and seeing what are the principles at play here and how does that work itself out in their personality, but then knowing that I have a really different personality, what does that look like when I'm wearing it as opposed to when they're wearing it?
Well, and one of the things that Geiger has brought out and being on the podcast before is the idea from the Leadership Code, that book, where it's basically 67% of leadership is transferable from position to position. And you reminded me of in that conversation was that a leader in one context can still be a great leader in another context. And it's more about him finding out who he is.
Yeah.
How he's wired and how he's going to lead well, and he can be a successful leader in multiple contexts, or she can be a leader in multiple contexts.
The self-awareness part of it is the challenge, and it's super duper important, right? That you truly know yourself. So here's, I mean, an example by.
Did you just say super duper?
Super duper.
All right. Please continue.
Righty tighty.
I completely threw you off. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Please continue.
Thanks, Ned Flanders.
What was I saying? That's right. Oakley doakley, Todd. Let's continue.
All right. Well, I'll ask you our third question.
You were going to give us an example
of some
kind.
That's right, a personal example. Okay. So I am I'm an introvert, but I like to think of myself as a pretty high-functioning introvert. Like, not...
Most are pretty low-functioning. Well,
you have to manufacture some extroversion for your job.
That's exactly right. So I get that. And I, you know, you do that. You work yourself up to do it. I'm a high-functioning introvert, which means I think that I have at least a minimal amount of social skills where I can have a real conversation with another real human, right?
Except when you say things like super duper.
You would be surprised at how favorably people respond to super duper.
It really puts them at ease.
Take a bowl.
For sure.
Possibly makes them feel superior.
Absolutely, tootly.
Gonna watch Scooby-Doo after this.
Yeah, yeah.
With some chocolate milk.
But for me, it means that, man, my leadership style as an introvert, like I can't, in as much as I want to do the walking around leadership kind of thing, and I know that I need to do that, for me, that can't be an all the time kind of thing. So the way that that has landed on me is that I literally have appointments on my calendar for walking
exactly
around.
Exactly what leadership. We've talked about before on the podcast. Yeah. Like from an emotional intelligence standpoint, you can actually put frameworks in place to help you be more self-aware and socially aware of what's going on in the organization.
Go talk to coworker
X. That's right.
Because it's not your natural inclination.
See, totally.
Todd has the opposite thing on his calendar. It's all walk around, and he has to put appointments on there for the go block, answer emails.
Go answer make a email. Phone
call. Yeah. But that's the self-awareness Here's part the phone of it, call right? Pieces. Is that you know. So you you discipline that which is not natural to you.
I will actually come out of my office sometimes and go, okay, if I come out of this office in the next 2 hours,
it gives us permission to cause physical harm.
It's
if
like
we
an
see
accountability
him.
Thing. Yeah.
More like an accountability thing. Cause sometimes you're just like, I've blocked this time to do this task and I really need to do it. Yep. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But you know, it all comes back to the discipline of getting things done. So I will ask you our third question now, which could relate, which is what are the obstacles that you're currently facing right now? And how are you addressing them?
Man, one of the obstacles that I've seen, Barnabas, you alluded to this earlier, when you are an editor, so again, this is all translated through our specific industry, right? Mm-hmm. So this is publishing. So if you are an editor on a product, you've got one thing that you do. That is your thing that you do. And as you move upward in leadership, you find, again, more than one thing that you have to focus on. Just with the amount that our team produces on a daily or weekly or monthly basis, there's just a lot. And for me, that transition has been a little bit jarring. And I've had to find some consistent ways to make sure that I not only prioritize what definitely needs to be done, but actually have enough hours in the day to be able to get it done.
What you value and the way you value it has to shift. So this, thank you, couldn't have scripted it better, leads right into a great conversation about leadership pipeline, which I will refrain from completely doing, but saying...
Say when that, you do that, it's not a conversation.
That bend, I know, but that it's so important to pull out the mind shift that has to take place when you move from leading yourself to leading others, from being an individual contributor on a team to leading a team. And when we don't put, competencies with that and help people make that shift, they flounder for 6 months to a year, typically, mm-hmm. Before they find their way. If they find their way, sometimes they don't find their way. Mm-hmm.
They fail before the 6 months.
Absolutely. And that's an obstacle that if you put it in front of someone that you're leading, you know, shame on you, because just because somebody didn't do it for you doesn't mean that you can't set them up for success. So that bend, that mind shift, what they value has to change, and you have to help them do that and prepare them for that before you give them the opportunity.
For somebody who's new in a role, like if you're a leader and then you've raised somebody up and they're coming into this role, and I've not done a good job of this. I want to do it better in the future. So I'm trying to learn from my mistakes here. But to your point, if you're a leader and you're elevating someone to a new position of leadership, one of the things that you really need to do is to protect that person from themselves in some way. So, for example, one of the reasons why I've struggled in the past with the time management thing of feeling like there's not enough time in the day to get everything done is because I had struggled with letting go of some stuff that frankly I don't need to be holding on to, right? I mean, you have to as you grow in your leadership, you have to let things go. It took somebody actually coming to me and saying, like, what are you, let's look at your calendar. What are you doing? And that person looking at the calendar and saying, for every one of these things you have in your calendar, who else can do this?
Yes.
And I looked, and 70% of the stuff that I was doing, someone else could do. His point was, you got to start filtering through your task management stuff, asking the question, what are the things that only you can do?
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. devote yourself to that. But it took, I was drowning in the sea of stuff. It took someone protecting me from me and helping me see that.
Well, it really comes back to, we do an exercise when we're consulting with a church on taking a staff profile, if they're lucky enough to have one, and saying, how much of your job is doing versus developing? And what can you do to shift more of your time to developing?
List out the top 10 or 20 things they do on a daily basis, and then they just put an X in a column. Is it doing or developing? So are you just doing tasks, or are you intentionally passing this off to somebody else? Well,
and the one of the lies that we believe is that when we pass off that doing task, that it won't be done as well.
Right. That's right.
The other lie we believe is that we're dumping on someone, when the reality is, if you're doing it correctly, you're actually developing that person as well.
Yeah. You're empowering them to do it. I mean, not to sort of do the broken record thing here, but that to me just smacks of self-awareness too, because one of the reasons that we hold on to that stuff is because of our personal insecurity. It's and we might claim, I've got to hold on to this because the work is so important, or this is too important. My experience, at least with me personally, is 90% of the time that's not true. The reason I'm holding on to it is not because I really think the work, this particular piece of work, is that important. The reason I'm holding on to it is because this piece of work makes me feel important when I do it. So it's not really even about the work. It's more about me.
Let's
about to close in prayers. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. Let's close in
prayer. A prayer of confession.
I feel convicted now. We should move on.
I was going to say, let's change subjects real quick before any more guilt comes up. And it is a change of direction, because we're going to move from organization to the home. And the question is, what does leadership in your home look like? You have what, 11, 9, and 6? Is that what
11,
you said?
9, and 6. That is them. I mean,
17 years of marriage, if you can remember correctly.
Yeah, which most of the time I cannot. I mean, in our house, it's really just me barking orders and people doing what I say.
Which All right, is next awesome. Question.
It is
never
not
heard that.
That
answer.
Sweetie, if you're listening.
She's not.
Let's be honest.
Hey, we've had some guests that their wives are bigger fans than they are. And we're like, do you listen to our podcast? I've heard a few episodes, but my wife loves it. That's crazy.
What does leadership look like in our home? You know,
this is the question to make people feel uncomfortable, because we get one of two answers. We either get the aspirational values question, where they're like, well, here's what I'd really like to be doing, but I'm really bad at.
Uh-huh.
Or they just sort of admit to not being very good at it.
Okay.
It's your choice.
So you pick.
All right.
Are you going to lie or confess?
Yeah. So this is really a win-win, guys. Thanks. Okay. So here's what it looks like. I'm trying to think again of principle, then down to practical examples, right? So I would start with this by saying that this is something that my pastor said many years ago that has, again, stuck with me. And I think it's a great principle for leadership in the home, that he just said, when you walk into the house, you're always bringing something with you, whether you recognize it or not. So by your very presence in the home is going to do something in your home. So you've got to decide, what do you want to bring into the house? And the best thing that you can bring into the house most of the time is a general sense of calm and peace, just that everything is okay, even if it's not okay, that everything is okay. So that's, I've thought about that often. I think about it a lot driving home on the commute of what am I going to bring into my home with my attitude, with my facial expressions, with all that stuff. What am I going to walk in the door with? So I think it's leadership in the home is like that from just a thinking standpoint. Practically, what it looks like is that, you know, there are a few key things that we try really hard to do with our kids that we think are important. So it's, we try not to be just sort of super duper heavy handed with them about a lot of stuff. But there are a few key things that we want to do with them. So some examples of that would be, we want to have, two meals a day together at the dinner table without devices. And we surround one of those. It has been breakfast up until now, but our kids are about to have different school schedules. So this is about to get difficult. But to do a family devotion. And we've used some really good tools for that, like some helpful books.
Like the Bible.
I have found with children that age, it works better to have an additional tool to the Bible. So
that's true.
We have used our favorite one has been this series of books called it's called Long Story Short. It's a great book, family devotion, real easy to understand, and it's a scripted kind of devotion that we've used. It's been great. We've used the Jesus Storybook Bible before.
Good one.
It's been good. So we do that, and then we have dinner together in the evening. So if the centerpiece of breakfast in the morning is family devotion, the centerpiece of dinner in the evening is some kind of question. So now we've kind of built this expectation that Daddy every night is going to ask us some kind of question about our day. So we play games.
Feel free to use five questions.
Who would you vote for, kids?
Yeah. Well, they're... Never mind.
My kids have opinions, and I have no idea where they hear them from.
Mine's
very definite opinion.
Uh-huh. They do. We turn it into a game a lot of times to get them to tell us about their day. So we play two truths and a lie a lot at dinner. So two truths about something... Two real things that happened to you today, and then one lie, and the family has to guess what the lie is.
I imagine that's pretty funny with the 6-year-old, because they're like, I fell off the monkey bars.
Yep.
I spilled my juice box, and a dragon ate my teacher.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of like that. There's a part of me that's really worried that I'm teaching my kids how to lie really well. So like even with my 11-year-old the other day.
They already know.
I think that's okay.
He said, Daddy, I really want to teach me how, because I can never get your lie. How do you do that? And I said, well, buddy, I said, you know, it's not a lie if you believe it. I did not say that. I said, with your lie, you want it to sound true. You want it to be partially true, but then just like one detail that's false. So this could massively backfire in about 10
what
years.
Satan does.
We'll see.
I think you've got about two.
Yeah, two years. Two, maybe so. So we'll do two truths and a lie. We also play this game called My Day Would Have Been More Interesting If.
Dragon had eaten my teacher.
And that's exactly how it works. So the way that the kids do it is you say, my day would be more interesting if a dragon, and then they make something up. And then they say,
no offense to educators, by the way.
And then they have to say, but instead, and give us some detail about their day that it was not their dragon ate their teacher.
Right. Instead, she's still alive.
Yeah, that's right. So all of that is just you know, it's just tools that we use to make sure that we're talking to each other. So we do that. And then another thing that we have done for a long time is we do every Sunday, it's chore day. So we do chores and the kids do their chores and then they get paid for their chores and then they have to manage their money. So they have to, you know, divide their money up into these little drawers that we have for them. And then
like full on Dave Ramsey.
I don't know. Maybe I assume so. Yes. But I guess it's kind of a modified version. I haven't actually read the Dave Ramsey kids stuff. I'm sure it's wonderful, but conceptually, yeah, I think it is.
Gotcha.
I mean, those are two things that we've tried to really, lean in on really, really heavily. They're certainly not the only things. But again, going back to the beginning, I think the principle for leadership is recognize you're going to bring something into your home every day and take an active role in deciding mm-hmm. what that thing is going to be. And then find these key areas of importance that you really want to, weigh in on real heavily.
All right. Fifth and final question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Buckle up.
Super
ready. Right. Super duper ready.
Super duper.
Oakley doakley.
Oh, wow. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead, or what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
What advice would I give my 20-year-old self?
Why don't you give us a brief description of your 20-year-old self?
Okay, so this will be interesting. I was actually in my first year of marriage. So we got married pretty young. We got married the summer after our sophomore year in college. So I was already married, and in truth, for that whole year, was having basically a 365-day panic attack, because I didn't know what. I mean, I was thinking things like, how do you pay your electric bill? I should have found out how to pay an electric bill before and now we have an apartment. Do we need long distance service for our apartment? Where do I get long distance service?
What's long distance?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's, I'm sure.
This day and age, uh-huh. there's somebody listening. Our interns would be like, what's long distance? Like, so, I have hats older than you.
I do. Well, a good hat is, you don't want to throw that away.
I have a baseball hat from high school. I saw in my closet and I was like, I looked at it and I was like, This is older than my
This thing has graduated from college.
Yes, it's crazy. It's a well-worn hat.
I got married at 22.
Did you feel like you were young?
Yeah, I mean, but the difference between 22 and sophomore year in college, those 2 years were dramatic in terms of, it's very hard for me to imagine being married at 20.
Yeah.
Oh my 22, goodness. I was young, but at least I was raring to go, trying to get out into the world. At 20, I was just loving college life.
Yeah. So we were married, living in an apartment about the size of this table. We had no money
Panic.
Was, yeah, total. For me, it was,
So Dana, what would you tell Panic Michael?
What would I tell Panic Michael?
Everything's going to be super duper.
Probably not.
Just saying.
That's a lie.
I would tell him something that sounded like the truth, but was just one detail off of what was like I tell my 11-year-old now for success at the dinner table. I think what I would tell him at 20 years old is that leadership and responsibility is a gift that feels like a burden, because it often does feel like a burden. There are times because when you lead in multiple arenas in life, I think for any leader, if you're a leader at church and maybe you're a leader in your workplace and you're a leader at home and maybe you're a leader of a small group and you're a leader of this and this and this, there are moments when you just, at least for me, I see there are moments when you want to say, I wish that everybody would just stop asking me for things, because it feels like people are asking you for stuff all the time. You need a decision about this. We need you to step up on this. We need you to, to do this or do that. People are always asking. So it just to prepare 20-year-old Michael to say, man, it's going to feel like a burden, but in reality, it is a gift. But you have to hold that in tandem, both sides, to be able to do it. Oswald Sanders said one time, I love this quote, leadership, he said, the world is run by tired men, and that fatigue is the price of leadership. I found that to be true. But there's also a very unique kind of joy that comes from leading, especially when you see people that you have led receive accolades, come into their own, have a measure of success. It's a beautiful thing. So that's one thing I would tell him. Maybe the second thing I would tell him is that a leader is the first one through the door. And, not to be super morbid here, but for the sake of the illustration, the leader is the first one through the door. And a lot of times the first one through the door is the one who gets shot. So that to be a leader a lot of times means that you are going to have to be willing to say the difficult things and to have the difficult conversation, but you can do that without being a, you can do that without being a jerk. And that would be the other thing that I would tell him about leadership is 20-year-old Michael, choose now not to be a jerk, or you might wake up when you're 30 and realize, wow, I've been a jerk for quite a while. Not that that happened or anything.
Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically.
You have a hypothetical memory of
a hypothetical that. Memory of a hypothetical 20-year-old Michael who was hypothetically too big for his britches and thought he was way smarter than he actually was.
I would love to hear from a listener who at 20 did not think they were way more important and smarter than they are. I mean, I'm sure that there are some people with, you know, who they had the flip side of things. They had to come into confidence and whatever else. But I feel like most people who rise to leadership thought way too highly of themselves at 20.
Yeah.
Todd and I both talked at length about this.
Oh, I just needed to get kicked in the teeth a few times.
Me too. There's a great, real quick on this, because it might be encouraging, I think. There's a great text. It's kind of buried in the book of Exodus. It's buried in the Red Sea account. So the children of Israel are marching out. The Lord has delivered them after the last plague. The firstborn of everything has died, and they're marching out, and it's before they get to the Red Sea. And there's a very direct pathway that they could go to the promised land, but I believe this is Exodus 13, that the Bible says that the Lord took them the long way around because he knew that if they faced battle that they would run. The ironic thing in that text is that it says that the Israelites were marching out of Egypt in battle formation. So it just, here's a group of people who
are... So it's the 20-year-old too big for his britches.
Totally. I'm ready to go. I'm ready for it. Bring it on. I mean, I'm ready to lead, and I'm ready for this amount of fame, and this, I'm ready to take me out. And the Lord takes you on the long way. And then at 20, you're thinking, man, this is taking forever, just like they were thinking this is taking forever. It's an opportunity for the 20-year-old to realize, man, the Lord actually knows me better than I know me. And I know that I think I'm ready, but if I'm going on the long way, then clearly I am not ready. There's the long way is the crucible that the Lord puts you into.
And for listeners, that encapsulates the kind of stuff you will get from Michael if you read his blog or his books, where he finds these nuggets that are tucked away in a story you're probably pretty familiar with.
Yeah.
I mean, Red Sea, Moses parts the sea, off they go, wander the wilderness.
Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah,
Old Testament. But in that is this very applicable lesson to be learned, which I had never noticed before. So I learned something, just like I do every time we get to talk to these guests. So, and again, you can read more from Michael at michaelkelly.co. His most recent book is entitled Boring. It is not a boring book. It's titled Boring: Finding an Extraordinary God in an Ordinary Life. So go check that out as well. Michael, thanks for joining us today. We have enjoyed this.
Thank you guys. Glad
it's
to
been
be here.
Super duper.
Super duper. Oakley
you
dunkley.
Beat me to it. That's not
sorry
fair.
About that. And listeners, we hope you have a super duper day as well. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register. Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.